Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, I love you.
Did you watch any boxing this weekend?
The fact that I'm thinking about it leads me to believe no. Just pissed me. What the hell did I do this weekend? Rich, this is how screwed up my life is right now. The fact of the matter is, I have no recollection what I did just 6 days ago.
Nice.
Let me think. Friday, I watched baseball and football. So I don't remember there being any ESPN fights on. Maybe they were, but I probably fell asleep. Saturday, I went to a baseball game, which sucked. And that's all. Yeah, I'm through any Showtime or HBO fights. I definitely missed out.
What did the baseball game do?
Sucked.
That's one of my favorite words, especially to when, you know, you're talking pejorative terms.
I mean, things that, like, make no sense to me, how, like, fans of a last-place team will talk shit. I don't understand it. As much as I've been working lately, I can't remember what I've done the last 5 days, honestly. But I did see an email. I saw a couple things on Facebook today, a couple of my boxing contacts on there. They'll post some funny things. And one thing I saw was Kimbo Slice talking about leaving the world of mixed martial arts to the world of professional boxing, which I'm sure he will also fail miserably at, because he needs stamina. I mean, he's not going to knock out guys with one punch, and he doesn't have defensive skills. I can't see him coming anywhere near, not just the Klitschko brothers, but I can't see him coming near, you know, even some of the lesser guys.
Hey, Kimbo's going to box.
Maybe Nikolai Valuev would be an interesting fight, but I see Valuev beating him. I don't see any top 20 heavyweight of him beating. Samuel Peter would kill him. Eddie Chambers would be too fast, have too many defensive skills for him.
Kick him in the knee. He'll be all done.
What?
Just kick him in the knee. He'll be all done. Knee him right in the knee. And that'll be his first foul. He'll get away with that.
Yeah.
And another foul, he could, like, sit on his knee up against the ropes. A couple punches later, Kimbo will be on the ground.
Yeah. Well, I don't even think they need to do that, honestly. I mean, I don't see him having...
I still think that Kimbo Slice should sue Dana White for calling out the knee issue during the Ultimate Fighter show. I mean, maybe Kimbo, obviously, he probably signed a waiver, you know, just to be on the show, so probably doesn't have the rights to sue, but, man, that'd be a nice lawsuit to watch, I think. Kimbo suing Dana White for saying, hey, you got a bad knee, to everybody out there who would have ever hired him after the UFC. And it exposed him to all his good opponents, too. And that's what they did. They put it for the knee. They destroyed that knee. His knee is probably so wrecked right now. He's like, you know, thinking, yeah, I'm going to get some surgery. Yeah, I'm going to retire. Do autograph signings for the rest of my life. I don't think he's going to get back in a cage anytime soon. And if he does, it's going to be against, like, an old school type of guy. Like, you know, maybe they'll finally do the Ken Shamrock fight, and that'll be Ken's last fight. Something's going to happen where he's just going to get some bum off the street. As Reggie Johnson used to say, a tomato can, or a guy from the bus stop. Who knows? He could fight in any circuit locally, anywhere he wants, you know, but as far as top-level competition, boxing or MMA, Kimbo's out of picture, I think. Unless he revolutionizes his game and gets a iron knee. Would you disagree, Tony?
You hear something?
Yeah, motorcycle just went by. Are you scared?
No, I didn't know what that was.
Oh. Yeah. Motorcycle. All right, you know what? I'm going to check. See what we got going on in the boxing news. You know, Google is the greatest site in the world. Did you know that? All right. Well, we believe it or not, James Tillman is at the top of the boxing news today. Are you mad?
My man?
Yeah, because he's not in there.
Why would I be mad?
He's in there for the UFC. Are you hoping for him to win?
I would love to see James Tony win, but I honestly, I don't see it happening. And like I said last week, it's because of the styles. James is a guy you like to fight in close, but also lean back a lot and do a lot of shoulder rolls and all good stuff like that. He's great at defending punches. But what's going to happen when he's defending against a takedown? And Rich, do you know from your amateur wrestling experience, what is the best way to take a person down? Shoot in, right? Now, if you were defending against a takedown...
Not necessarily, though. If a guy is bigger than you, and he knows how to, what they call sprawl, which is
right.
Kick your legs back and put all your weight on the guy. If James has practiced his sprawling well enough with his weight, he can just smother Randy right away. And then just
right.
Right back up to his feet and go back to boxing stance. You know what I mean?
Okay. I mean, hey, maybe you're right. I mean, I don't know. I mean, because I would just think the way to, you know, if you're like, going for a takedown, you want to be kind of bent and shooting in, you know, maybe just kind of square it up a little bit. If Couture goes like that and James is able to counter him with maybe an uppercut or a straight right on the way in, oh, he could certainly catch him. But I just see James's boxing style is not one that's going to transfer over well to UFC. I mean, that's what I said a couple weeks ago, just because his style is one where he likes to play defensive, likes to play counter, likes to lean back, likes to fight in close where a guy is able to get his hands on him and, you know, grapple him down.
Bruce Buffett did say at the beginning of the year, I have a complete combat sports mindset. So, no, I don't know. I really don't know. I can't predict MMA. I've already said that before, but I do like James Toney's chances just because I think he's making people purposely underestimate him. And it's going to pay off in his favor because he's got the weight advantage. It's a real freak show, you know, compared to UFC's past fights. You know, like, they were supposed to have moved beyond that type of fight where it's, you know, it's not a freak show as in, you know, it's not a good guy against another good guy. It's a freak show as in the weight difference. You know, you don't see that often unless you go to, like, the heavyweights like Valuev versus some skinny guy, you know. But even that's, you know, just punches. And this is everything, you know. So it's going to be interesting. And Randy Couture actually was mentioned by Bruce Buffer when I asked him, you know, who's your favorite fighter? Who's the fighter you like the most? And he's like, right off the bat, he said, you know, obviously all of them, you know, he likes all a lot of them. But he was like, first one was Randy Couture, you know, just because of the type of human being he is. So he's got a fan base and he's going to have probably a lot of the crowd, you know, with him. You know, and obviously, I don't think James Toney has any love in Boston, but Boston is a boxing town too. You know, so it's like Philly. You know, it's got that boxing roots that a lot of cities don't have. So who knows? Who knows what the crowd is going to be like? What that's going to add to it? But you know, from any fight, boxing or MMA, the crowd loves to see a slugfest more than anything
else. Oh, yeah.
And if James Toney and Randy Couture, with his dirty boxing, get into a slugfest toe-to-toe, James Toney wins that fight. So, don't count them out.
The more they're on their feet, the more it favors James. James is a guy that he is good at deflecting punches, good at letting punches, you know, roll up and not making solid contact. And he's excellent at countering. I don't know if Randy would be able to defend against that because James is very slick in there. He's really tricky in there from a boxing standpoint. But I would be interesting to know how he would defend against the other, styles and other techniques out there. Grappling, submission fighting, wrestling, anything like that. I mean, I just don't know if he is well-rounded enough. Just figure the guy's done, I mean, I don't know when he started training in any type of mixed martial arts, but you figure, I mean, he's done boxing. I mean, he's been on the championship level, boxing-wise, for the last 20 years. You figure he was fighting professionally long before that. I mean, he won the title off Michael Nunn in 1991.
And people forget Bolt. They're both Bolt guys. A lot of people are forgetting that. They think Randy Couture is...
James is the other guy, surprisingly. James is the younger guy.
Yeah, that's the big thing people forget. I pointed that out a few weeks ago. But then again, you know, a lot of these people think that the UFC is worth $1.25 billion. And we know that ain't true. But anyway, I'm going to piss you off right now, Tony, because I don't know if you've heard, but the Tijuana Tornado is approved in Texas.
I actually just saw that also. That was another thing I was going to mention. I saw another Facebook boxing post about that. A lot of people are not happy about it either.
17 months after California stripped the Mexican boxer of his license. 17 months. That's all he got. What can you do?
Well, I mean, they're going to put him in a big match, and hopefully he takes a beating.
Yeah, right. Not hopefully. I mean, it's Margarito versus Pacquiao. Are you kidding me? No.
No, I mean, nothing's guaranteed. Anybody, you know, could beat anybody out there.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, if the odds would favor Pacquiao.
He's gonna ruin him. He's gonna make a boxing statement. And he's gonna. That's the perfect fall guy. That's like Darth Vader versus Luke Skywalker. He's a hero for just fighting them and beating them to a punt, hopefully. That's the kind of fight that you'd like to see being fought blood sports style with only Pacquiao allowed to put glass on his gloves. Anyway, I'm not getting too deep into that discussion, but Texas, we're going to talk about Texas because, you know, with all this legal crap I've got to deal with every freaking day of my life lately, I finally I got off the schneid with this whole Reggie Johnson thing, and I started digging my nose into the letters I've been getting from Reggie nonstop. Just got one today when I came home from Barnstable, Massachusetts, and you know, this guy is fighting tooth and nail just to tell people he's innocent, and this is unbelievable. I set up the website finally. FreeTheChamp.com. Pretty simple, but it was available, surprisingly enough. A lot of champs have been in jail to have to resort to that, I guess. But FreeTheChamp.com. It details his saga, the what he calls Harris County Hell down there in Houston, Texas. And I left a message for the district attorney down there, and these letters just kind of got me fired up. I hadn't even really had a chance to read them until recently. And, you know, I got through some of them, and I just was like, geez, I don't even care if I don't have time to work on this thing. I got to call some people, and I got to look into some things. And I called the DA, and I left her a message, and I was asking her, you know, why is this guy in jail for more than you make in a year? And she emailed me back, and she was like, you know, said some generic message like, you know, we're not going to fight this in the press. It's going to be in a court, and if you're welcome, if you want to come to the trial, you can watch. You know, but not really given any answers that I really needed to get from her as far as what was really going on there. You know, so hopefully the website gets him some good attention. And maybe we can find him a lawyer somehow. I'll be working to do that. But FreeTheChamp.com. Go to it. There's a link. There's a little box. You can cut and paste the banner. You can print out the pages and leave them somewhere. You know, spread the word. This guy's getting screwed like Reuben Carter. You know, and he's been in jail 2 years before even getting a trial. 2 years waiting for a trial. And a good lawyer hasn't come along yet to, you know, set things straight. It's just unbelievable, but that's my rant.
What's more unbelievable is the fact that you get these scumbags out there, you know, druggies, you know, people that go out there, get all high, kill people, you know, rob them, kill them to get drug money. And what happens is they get about 80 lawyers and 50 appeals.
Yeah, guess what, Reggie's in there for higher bail than accused murderers. He's expecting a higher bail, and instead they accused murderers. It turns out it's organized crime, for Christ's sake. Organized crime. He's a boxer who's got, like, a history in the community down there. You know, he just made a ton of money off this big fight that he's just in. And the guy that set up this whole grant for him did all the paperwork. He got 17% off the top. And, you know, I don't even know what's going on with him. I mean, I bet he's out on bail if he had high, you know, had enough in his bank account. I think he was accused at one point, but I don't even know if he's still in the thing, you know. But it's just, it's unbelievable how they got to the number of his bail, I heard. They doubled what he allegedly stole. Well, the grant was for $120,000. And they never, it doesn't seem like they ever took the 17% that the grant writer got off the top. And they froze all Reggie's bank accounts, so whatever money was in there didn't get brought off the top. So where did all the money go, you know, and how much money did this other guy steal that Reggie was, that was his manager for the fight. Not only was the guy that wrote the grant, but he was his manager for his last fight where he won the title again. So what the hell is going on? How come people don't see this, you know? It's always the manager, if anything, has organized crime going on. It's not the boxer. Unless he's taking a dive in the fight, like Jake LaMotta. I mean, come on. How deep do you have to look into a situation like that? It's just disgusting when you see the facts right in front of you. And you know they're trying to hide him because there's a bigger thing going on. You know, because that was part of $1.1 million. And only Reggie's camp and one other camp with civil servants. Guys, an EMT is being brought up on charges in the other case. So it's like, why are they going after a boxer and a civil servant rather than the people who are supposed to oversee all these transactions, you know? Why isn't it civil? Why is it criminal? It just blows your mind. But go to freethechamp.com. I haven't even begun to put the complete amount of content that I have up on that site, you know, I'm going to put snippets up here and there. And what's there right now, you got Reggie's address, you got the address of the district attorney, so hopefully we can develop some grassroots, you know, Martin Luther King Jr. type of stuff here. Get the people to fight back against this kind of system, because Reggie ain't the only one. He wrote to me today, get this, Tony, they got a 97% conviction rate in Harris County. He said it's like the pound-for-pound boxer Floyd Mayweather. Pounding out people out of their justice. That's a trade letter today. I mean, it's sad that he has to write something like that. He has time to do it because he's behind bars. But, you know, it's like heart and soul from this guy. And you can tell he's innocent. He chose me. Because I wrote one story about him. And he didn't even have any clue the legal experience that I had. But he chose me anyway. Just because I wrote a story. So Reggie's going to get my help. And he deserves it, you know? It's sad that there's no public defender down there who would step up and fight for a guy like that. Reggie was never knocked out once in his whole boxing career. Not once. Knocked down 5 times, I think, in the Roy Jones Jr. fight. Knocked down 5 times, I think. I remember him telling me that. But he never got knocked out.
And you figure, he fought some really good guys in the prime. I mean, he took a prime James Toney to a split decision and put Toney down, cut him pretty bad. And, you know, he also, you know, fought a prime Roy Jones, and he took him the distance, too.
Yeah, so let's free the champ. You know, whatever the guy has done, whatever the evidence that shows that he's done, it's either a trumped-up civil charge or he at least deserves to be out on bail. So he can prepare for his trial and get a good defense. You know, that's the justice system. That's the way it's supposed to be. You're innocent until proven guilty. So, either way, you know, he's not guilty of the stuff that, no matter what, he's not guilty of the stuff that they're trying to say he is. And the bail amount is just ridiculous. You should be in there for a higher bail than murderers, accused murderers. It's disgusting to even hear that goes on. You know, and it makes sense that Margarito's going down there to Texas now. rubber stamp anything, I guess. But sad to see. Anyway, maybe some people will boycott it. I don't know. I think you get Filipinos to fill every empty seat. did. I got the Kimbo's going into boxing story right in front of me, but I'm going to give you a big caveat. Caveat emptor. Buyer beware. It's Shaw, you know. Gary Shaw, trying to say that Kimbo's going into boxing. Now, Gary Shaw happened to be connected to Pro Elite, which Bruce Buffer was going to, or is going to go off on in about maybe 14 minutes or so. Don't have time to do that, but Gary Shaw said that he was going to be a Kimbo boxer about 20 years ago.
I remember that.
And I think I was on that conference call, and I asked specifically about it in another conference call, that same one. That was back when I was really, really every day involved, and I didn't have to do lawyer shit. What other crap. But I'm reading this ESPN article, and that's also interesting. Kimbo is supposed to be going to Gleason's gym, I guess. I know that's just where Gary Shaw told some people he was going to have a deal signed with Slice. So the deal's not even signed. But Shaw told ESPN that he'd inked the deal that Slice would debut sometime between October and December, depending on how much progress he makes with trainer Clemente Medina, a California-based tutor. So they're going to be running the California coast, I guess. Be in shape, get that knee back. I don't know, but yeah, that's a good move to get out of MMA, because either way, you know, he's going to get kicked in that knee. In boxing, you'll have to be like a guy like Galata, like I said, the following. More power to him if he can do it. You know, he's a good athlete. He's got his game together. The only thing I worry about with him is his reach. You know, it's going to kill him. He doesn't have good reach. He's got too much muscle. Like, what's his name there? World's Strongest Man fighting Butterbean.
Yeah.
I don't know if that went down yet, but can't wait to find out who wins that one. But, yeah, he's not an MMA if he's going to go into boxing. But, I don't know, this article is kind of like in the same paragraph saying it happened, and then it didn't happen. I don't know what to believe. The first statement says that he was confident he would have a deal signed, and he inked the deal. I don't know if anybody checked the facts on that one. Anybody see a deal? Anybody actually witnessed the signature? Gary Shaw has lied before, obviously, too, because he said that he was going to do that with Kimbo and have him do a double sport like Bo Jackson.
Yeah. Except Bo was actually good.
And he might have been on steroids. Oh, who said that?
I don't believe that.
Well, maybe.
Bo was the man.
Bo Jackson was the man. Wasn't he a race car driver, too? No, that's not a question. Alright, well, it's 8:30 now. We've blabbed enough, I think. So, we got 16 minutes of fame for Bruce Buffer. My kid. He made me famous just for having the interview with him. This is one of those times where, you know, you get done with it, and it just, everything had come together so smoothly. You know, except I'm not rolling the G in my name, but hey, I don't want to complain, honestly. I've been called Bergeron by plenty of people. But anyway, his interview was just fantastic. He's so quick fire, you know, which obviously is what makes him a good manager for his brother, which you'll find out about, and what makes him a good announcer. But here's the thing, a little spoiler. I'm going to let you listen, but I'm going to see if you can guess. You didn't listen to it already, right?
No, I didn't listen to it already.
All right.
How do I listen to it already?
Well, it's on fnu.mypodcast.com, too. It's on the podcast page already. That's how I record.
Oh.
So.
Oh.
Anyway, here's a question. What do you think, what did he say was the hardest name that he ever had to pronounce?
The hardest name he ever had to pronounce. I mean, in MMA, are you a fight or any fight in general?
Well, I think he's only done MMA, so.
Okay. Because I know in boxing, they always had a lot of these fighters from Thailand that had some unbelievable names.
You got what I thought you were thinking the same way, like, because I was like, you know, it's going to be some Chinese guy with some huge name. And you'll hear
Okay, so I'm going to say it's going to be a Spanish name. And the hardest name you've ever had pronouncing? Maybe it's not a Spanish name. Maybe hardest name he ever had to pronounce? Rabble Razzle Rich Bergeron.
That's what they call, what do they call that? They call that a segue. If I can get this thing to play on time. Alright, so it's going to throw you for a loop. Here we go. Alrighty, ladies and gentlemen, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron, and we're on the way with Chris Buffer, the voice of the Octagon. How's it going today, Chris?
It's going great. Really good. Thank you.
First of all, I want to get some questions out of the way from my boy from Pennsylvania, who's not here today, but he's going to be on the show on Thursday tomorrow. Ask about your Pennsylvania connections. He's from Roslyn. He wants to. He's a native of. Well, no, he's a native of Glenside, Pennsylvania.
Well, actually, I lived in Glenside, Pennsylvania. I used to live in, when I was a kid. I was 12 years old at the time, and we lived in the old Southern apartment building. Took an apartment for my dad and had your building being built. Apartment for us, and which was not just back then. And I had a great time there. Went to Glenside Elementary School and went to Chopin. My brother went to Chopin for 9 flights more. Went to Cedar Brook Junior High School, but the rest of the schools are.
And Tony was talking the other night about how sometimes when the fight goes bad, as far as, you know, the decision isn't really reflecting the true winner, you know, especially in the fans' eyes. What's that like when you have to announce a decision like that?
Well, you know, the thing is, I don't get emotionally involved. You don't shoot the messenger. I'm there to do a job, and I'm there to give equal person excitement to both fighters and equal excitement to the winner, because that's all about the judges. It's not about me. I have to go out and do my thing. There's times that I'll roll my eyes inside my head and go, well, they're looking at it. But you know what? That's me being a fan. There's no basis on the fight itself. So I'm just doing my job. Doing my job this time.
And as far as the sibling rivalry between you and Michael, is there one? And do you guys compete against each other in anything?
No, there's no sibling rivalry because, number one, we only met each other like 22 years ago. We didn't grow up together. We're very close. We're brothers. But, and remember, I managed his entire career. I direct and manage his career. So there's no sibling rivalry when I'm making my brother millions of dollars to do what I'm doing. It doesn't interfere with him, and our styles are completely different. So it's a really good mutual relationship.
All right. And do you have any predictions on who's going to be the next breakout superstar in mixed martial arts in the UFC?
Yeah, John Jones. He's probably going to be one of the biggest stars the UFC's ever seen.
And if you watch boxing, Tony wants to know, who are your favorite fighters and what fights would you like to see?
Right now, in boxing, the only fight I want to see is Pacquiao and Mayweather. I'm sorry to say that as much as just I love boxing and as many great boxers are out there making their marks and stuff, there's just no marketable boxers that are capturing the attention of the public eye. And once Mayweather and Pacquiao retire, which is very close, I think it's going to be very rough on boxing. As far as domestically, boxing is huge in Europe and still doing very well here. But I don't follow it like I used to because it just doesn't grab me like it used to. It doesn't have that romance like it had for me back in the late 80s and the early 90s. Even 12 years ago, it's just a lot of personalities have left and there's nobody really capturing, dominating, and causing that kind of attention. With all respect to the fine boxers that are out there.
I know the feeling. I feel the exact same way.
I'm a huge boxing fan.
So it hurts to know that, too. You know, that everybody screams for the Mike Tyson ever, and it's gone.
I don't think you'll ever see that again.
Yeah. Now, you're considered, like I said, the voice of the Octagon, but outside introducing fighters, what kinds of things do you do to improve and promote the UFC and the whole sport of MMA in general?
I've worked my butt off for 16, 17 years, however long I've been doing this, and using my own money, my own media connections and everything. I did a lot of work promoting the UFC and the sport, and still do it my own way, but with the machine that's being run now, and Sufa, the Dana White and the Virginia's is so wonderfully put together, people are coming after them, where before you had to fight to get any attention. So I used to, you know, get them on Best Damn Sports Show when it first happened, and I get some of the fighters on, you know, like news shows or Jay Leno. I got Gene Ortiz on, and you know, I go on and on and on. I would do everything I could to bring attention to the sport. But they don't need that kind of help from me now because it's just a well-oiled machine that people all want a piece of. As most people in Hollywood don't know what works till it works, and they all wanted to wait till it works, and then they couldn't believe that it worked, and now they think it's the greatest thing since 7-Up, and that's Hollywood.
Now, how did you first get the job as an announcer for the UFC?
I managed a fighter named Scott the Pitbull Ferrazzo down into Puerto Rico, and in Puerto Rico, I convinced them to let me do the prelims, and then I got called back for UFC 10. And then I co-starred on Friends, and I told them if I do this, I need to be the announcer for every single UFC event because you're going to have me co-stars myself, and they're all going to think I'm the announcer forever, and that's the way it should be, so let's make a deal. And that was the best poker game I ever played. But, of course, you get fired any time, so you've got to do a good job from that point forward.
All right, of course. And speaking of doing a good job for the losses, actually, how well do you know Dana White and Fertitas, and what can you tell us about them that most people might not know?
You can look at them from what you read out in the news and everything, but they're just great people and very loyal to the people that are loyal to them. Very driven, very passionate, and without them, we wouldn't be having this conversation right now. We probably wouldn't even have mixed martial arts legalized in this country.
Right, bold statement. Now, what's the hardest name you've ever had to pronounce for an introduction?
John Finch. John Finch. But you have to arrange something. Single syllabic names are always hard. Warren Smith was actually probably the worst of all.
Stepped over me for a little because I was expecting like some Chinese name or something.
No, the more difficult, the better.
And what's the craziest thing you've ever seen in all your years of announcing?
The Buffer 360 and UFC 100. The craziest thing I've ever seen, I've seen more than I can remember. I've forgotten more than I can remember, let's put it that way. That's why I'm going to write a book, and in the book I'll have a lot of different things, but I've seen everything. Pretty much.
And does the UFC let you work for other organizations? Or are you under the same type of contract as the fighters where you can't even do Sambo competitions or anything?
I don't want to work for anybody else. I just want to work for them. I went exclusive with them 4 or 5 years ago. I was announcing pretty much everybody's events that were on an A level up to that point. And right now with all the UFCs and everything going on, this is plenty of work for me. And I'm very happy. And quite frankly, I'd rather build my other businesses in other areas. I did the ADC, Abu Dhabi Championships, and that's it.
Now, what do you love most about what you do?
Everything. My life is not about work. My life is about a way of life, and I only do what I'm passionate about. And I love being in the octagon with the UFC. I love creating the toys and video games and stuff I've done with the Let's Get Ready to Rumble brand. And I love expanding my own brand as I'm doing now, and I love the world of poker in which I play. I have fun at everything I do, and if I don't, or you know, what you would try, but I don't need it. I'll go on to something else. So if you can earn money from what you enjoy, that's the best way.
Moment of here so far.
There's been many, and they become more. Like, for instance, when we came into Las Vegas, that was a great moment. When we came to Staples Center in L.A., that was a great moment. When we go into Madison Square Garden, that will be the next great moment, and probably the epitomize the, you know, the legitimacy of everything we do, and the last mark we need to attain here in the United States of America, outside of what they're doing internationally. So that'll be the next greatest moment of my career, as far as announcing is concerned.
And what about Boston? Do you have any predictions for that card?
Yeah, it's going to be an incredible night of fights. It's going to be every hour. Nick Diaz and Marcus Davis, Kenny Florian, Gray Maynard, BJ Penn, Frankie Edgar, James Toney, and Randy Couture. This is going to be an amazing night. We had an amazing night with Anderson Silva a few weeks ago, and we're going to have another great night. And if you're a USC fan, it's going to be crazy to miss this day for you. Crazy.
Right. Well, James Toney's been saying that, and that was one of my next questions. Do you think his mouth is good for the sport and selling tickets and pay-per-view buys and that sort of thing?
For now. For now. After Saturday night, it'll either be ongoing because he beat Randy, or it'll be, you know, get back to basics and learn what you got to do to survive in this game, James.
Right. Now, also, what do you think about the whole boxing versus MMA rivalry that's been stirred up a little bit over the years?
I don't get caught up in it. They're two different sports that can survive on their own. They're two respected fighting sports. They're not the same fighting sport. There's no reason to compare the two, but everybody wants to because they want to see them grow. MMA's become big because MMA's become big because the UFC has made MMA big. Nothing else other than the UFC. All these other organizations, God bless them, they should, I hope they last. I hope they're around for all the other fighters to get fights in and everything. But the reality is, the UFC is the tissue and the Kleenex and the Xerox and the copier. That is what has created and made the mainstay of mixed martial arts in this country. And again, you have to thank Dana White and Fertitas for that. And Robert Myers for what he started it, but you really have to thank Dana White and Fertitas because they're the ones that took all of the work that was done and then added on to it and busted down the doors to get us to where we are today. I don't say that about Pro Elite because I think they were a batch of crap. And I say that because of the way that they promoted Kimbo Slice, with all respect to Kimbo, who I like. But you don't take a guy because he got the three B's of white, he's big, bad, and black in the world of fighting like Mike Tyson, and say, this is the next Mike Tyson. This is what mixed martial arts is all about. They lost me as soon as they did. And I have lost all respect for the organization.
Now, who is your favorite fighter overall?
I have many of them. Randy Couture to me is the greatest role model inside and out of the octagon. BJ Penn's, just incredible. I think John Jones and Anderson Silva and George St. Pierre are new breeds that are just breaking down barriers and walls, they're blowing us away with what's going on. And you're going to see another level of fighter come along because that's where the sport is. It's still not necessarily in its infancy stage, but it's in its growth stage. And there's much more stuff to be taken.
And what's it like to be immortalized with a figure, like the Round 5 series, the figurine?
Oh, it's awesome. It's awesome. It's great. I mean, this week, I mean, bring out the Versus series with me in between two fighters, like Brock Westbrook here. When I was bidding the game, that was me. The dream. It's not a good life.
You control those hounds.
I don't know what's the question. And there's much more stuff to me.
And what's it like to be immortalized with a figure, like the Round 5 series, the figure?
Oh, it's awesome. It's awesome. It's great. I mean, this weekend we bring out the Versus series with me in between two fighters like Brock Lesnar, Mike Muir, Liddell, and Ortiz. And the reaction figure is awesome. I mean, when I was in the video games, that was great, and the top part came out of the dream, and then have your own action figure. It's not about the money, it's wonderful. It's a wonderful experience, and I'm very humble and proud about it.
Yeah, it's the best fight you ever saw live.
Yeah, so many of them. Roderick Griffin, Guida, and Sanchez. Fights. There's just so many. It's hard to pick the greatest one. You know, one time I picked a lot of great fights, a plethora of great fights.
Now I know we established that you probably would never.
And tough in his own right, but he doesn't want to go there. Guida and Sanchez. Numerous Randy Couture fights. There's just so many. It's hard to pick the greatest one. You know, one time I picked the greatest one. 3 months later, there's another great one. So there's just a lot of great fights, a plethora of great fights.
Now, I know we established that you probably never fight, but if there was one, if it win between you and your brother?
God bless Michael, the greatest announcer that ever lived, and tough in his own right, but he doesn't want to go there. I'm not going to hit my brother. He's too pretty. I can't hurt that pretty guy.
Who has a better voice?
Michael. I have my moments, but it's not with me. It's not what I say. It's how I say it. I mean, I am not one to sit here and say I have. I think I'm probably the most physical. I'm somewhat exciting. Or some of the most announcers in respect to how I do my work. But I will give credit to Michael for having the greatest voice in announcing.
All right.
And people have gotten on me and said, no, that's not true. But you know what? You're asking me my opinion. I'm giving it to you.
All right, cool. And how did you come up with your own best catchphrases for announcing? And also on a side note, do you have any of them trademarked like he does, let's get ready to rumble?
I make sure let's get ready to rumble with protected in all aspects of the game. I just got a formal federal trademark from the government for its time. And how I came up with the catchphrases, every announcer thinks they've got to walk out and they've got to have a catchphrase. And a lot of them will, you know, they're all going to copy Michael over the years. My catchphrases were not, it was not important to me to have a catchphrase. It was important to me to excite the audience and do a great job announcing. But the catchphrases came about, it just caught on. I mean, it used to be It's Time to Begin, how I started every day, which culminated into It's Time for the main event. And We Are Live at the start of the event. And those two have just gone on as being staples of the UFC shows and of my work. And I think that was more the emphasis of the attention that was brought to it by the fans and the people watching than me sitting down and saying, hey, I'm going to make this a catchphrase known around the world.
Right.
You know, I don't think there'll ever be another Let's Get Ready to Rumble for all the reasons involved, how it was created, how it came about, and the way I was able to market it over the last 20 years. As far as, you know, we sold quite a lot of money, you know, products and everything off the phrase, products that we created. And that was my goal with that. You know, I can see that. I just don't know if I can see another phrase having that kind of marketability as, you know, as a very conservative person.
That's cool. And then, do you have any advice for any young kid out there who would like to fill your shoes someday for some other organization, or, well, God forbid, that you're not around anymore?
You know, basically the bottom line is that you concentrate on your voice, your inflection, your delivery, concentrate on your ability to be comfortable, you know, talking in front of a large group of people, and above all, develop your own style. I mean, everybody naturally copies Michael, or I see people who copy what I do these days in certain ways. And, that's nice, that's a compliment, but you're never going to get anywhere unless you have your own individual style. And concentrate on getting gigs in your local geographic area, building a resume, and seeing if that's something that you can, you know, apply to other organizations for, and based on your resume, will they fly you out and spend the money they have to spend to have you there? And that's not always the case, because, you know, ring announcers don't make a lot of money. Granted, Michael and I do very well, you know, what we do. I mean, we're very, very well paid. But as a rule, you know, in small organizations, it's not a lot of money, and they're not going to spend a couple thousand bucks in expenses to fly you out. So concentrate on your local geographic area and establish yourself locally first.
Good idea. All right, any final thoughts or shout-outs you want to give to anybody before we go?
No, just, you know, thanks for all the fans for, you know, supporting the UFC and the great sport of mixed martial arts and all the other organizations out there, and continue to do so as this phenomenal sport grows. And I'd like to have everybody come listen to me and my radio show, It's Time Radio, lifestyle show. We talk everything from UFC to sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And I'm live every Tuesday. And it's at BufferZone.net. Just go to BufferZone.net or Sure Dog Radio Network and look for me. And there are the shows right there, all archived. And it's really a lot of fun.
Sweet. Well, it was great having you. And definitely look forward to seeing you in action in Boston, my hometown. And thanks for stopping by.
Yeah, I can't wait. It's going to be great. Say hi when you see me, okay?
All right.
Okay, Rich, take care now.
You too.
Thank you.
Yep. So there you have it. That's Bruce Buffer, the voice of the Octagon. And, if you're with us, Tony, I just want to ask you one question. A couple questions. Are you afraid to speak?
I'm with you. I'm here.
Whoa. You're louder than your barking dog there for a second.
My dog?
Dog went ballistic. Screwed up the recording and everything.
You could hear him?
Yeah, I could hear everybody talking. At one point, I was like, shut up!
Here's what the hell happened. I'm here, I'm in, like, you know, in kind of the one room, you know, doing the show, and I hear my dog barking like crazy. I'm like, okay, someone must be here. Why the hell is someone coming over at 9 o'clock at night? So I go downstairs, I see a car pulling up the driveway. It's dark out, you know, my dog's stupid enough that he'll stand in the middle of a freaking driveway. So I go out there and he's just barking like crazy with the neighbor's wife, another dog. My father's out there, my dog will bark at anything, you know. So he's just barking because he's happy to see people, he's happy to see another dog. And I said, shut the hell up, God damn it! So I turned my phone off speaker, and I put it up to my ear. I don't think you guys would be able to hear through that.
Oh, yeah, we heard the whole shebang.
Lovely.
Shebang. But I adjust this on the fly, as usual. But Bruce had some good things to say. I mean, he went a little Keith Olbermann, actually. I don't know if you noticed. Did you hear the Keith Olbermann part? That I was talking about earlier. You know,
which part was that?
Oh, when he said, that was a batch of crap.
Oh.
Once that phrase came out of his mouth, he went totally Keith Olbermann. He almost, like, sounded exactly like Keith Olbermann when he goes on his rant now on MSNBC, but he's making more sense than Keith Olbermann makes a lot of times. But, man, oh, man, he ripped into them. And that's good stuff. That's raw stuff that, you know, you start asking good questions and you throw a big bone in there like that for him to go off on. Take the bait and go. He went. That was great. I was glad to hear him. Voice's full opinion on that matter. But as to his advice, I wanted to ask you, Tony, are you afraid to speak in front of large audiences?
Why?
Yeah.
No, not really.
Do you have your style?
With me, talking in front of large audiences, I get a few pre-jitters before I go up there. But other than that, I just let it go. So to answer that question, no, really, I'm not.
All right.
I mean, I did public speaking classes while I was in college.
Oh, so did
I. And it was funny because the one girl that I'm still friends with her, we're Facebook friends now. But we were in a public speaking class together, and it was about 20 people. It was about 20 people in the class. Yeah, we had to speak. It was about 20 people in the class, and 18 of them were girls. And I'm not talking like this is a good thing, because most of them were very unattractive girls. Like a girl that's a friend of mine, you know, she was okay, you know, a nice girl. But like I said, at first she hated me. Because the other guy in the class was a military guy. He was ROTC, Army to the Core. And, you know, our first speech was something you believe in. I did some, you know, bullshit, you know, whatever. This one girl gets up there, and she talked very passionately about, you know, the Second Amendment and why that should be taken away, how no human should be allowed to own a gun, and they're horrible, and they kill people, and this and that. I think it was because her father killed her mother or something like that, and then drunk and rage. So I turned to this kid, this Army kid, and I said, last speech of the year, I said, I am turning this around. I came out, I did an impassioned speech about, you know, why the Second Amendment rights should be protected. I mean, I did research on it. I mean, I got up there, and the first thing I said was, I said, I know most of you don't agree with the stance that I am taking. So I said, most of you I know don't agree with the stance I am taking, but I hope you at least give me the respect to give my speech, and then at the end we'll have an open discussion about it. And that pissed them all off. And the teacher, she was like a lesbian feminist. She hated me anyway. But the army kid, when I was done, he got up, gave me a standing ovation. He's like, that was awesome. And all the girls are like, that was terrible. It was the worst thing I've ever heard. And we're like, fuck you. And the teacher was like, I personally don't agree with your point here. I said, Jim, I said, but for the class, I said, did I pass this? She goes, well, it was a very good speech. I have to give you an A. But I don't agree with it. I'm like, yeah, but you're passing me, and that's all that matters.
Nice. Well, I actually had a very similar experience, believe it or not. I mean, it's like one of those reasons why we did the show together. It's just like we were on the same path in life at one point, and now we're on the same path again every Thursday night at 8 p.m. But I had a high school teacher who was also a lesbian and taught political science. And she had one session one day. It was like one of the first days of class, and I was in like AP history with this lady in political science. And you know, she used to wear the knee-high boots and everything. She was a lipstick lesbian, as they say. And she looked good, you know. A lot of guys were hot for her. I was hot for her, hell, you know. It was like junior, senior year, so she was good looking, but then, you know, somebody was like, hey, dude, she's a lesbian. I was like, oh, no! How could that happen? Anyway, no, I don't have a problem with lesbians, especially when they're being lesbians in front of me. But to get to the point, she had this question the first day of class. She goes, who in this room agrees with Bill Clinton, likes Bill Clinton? And people went to one side of the room, and the people that didn't like Bill Clinton went to the other side of the room. Of course, I went to the other side of the room. And she gives this 5-minute speech on how great Bill Clinton is, how the economy was like magically again, now who likes Bill Clinton? Go to this side of the room. And everybody went to the other side of the room but me. I stayed on that one side of the room because I said, you know what? None of that shit that you just said makes sense, you know? Because he's still a scumbag, draft dodger, and a liar. You know? So, I mean, look at the history. History, you know, might say that he was a great president, you know, for a lot of the things he did. And nobody can knock a president that tries. He tried a lot. He did a lot of good things for the country. But, you know, the way this woman described him, like he was just, you know, infallible and expected everybody to just listen to her because she's older and wiser. I just said, no, I'm not going to the other side of the room. I stand by my words, and I'll never forget one day when I was at the Air Force Academy, and Bill Clinton's picture was in the front of my book for the freshmen they're supposed to study, right? And for some reason, I forget, you know, just a random thing, I scribbled his face out with some a pencil, you know, it wasn't even like marker, it was just pencil. And so one of the upperclassmen one day, he's like, you know, quizzing me on all the rook knowledge, they call it, well, they call that. Called it that at Norwich, but Air Force Academy, they call it your fourth class year knowledge, whatever. So he's screaming at me about this, that, and the other thing. We're going, do I know this quote? Do I know that quote? And he gets to the page of Bill Clinton, and he starts busting out laughing. It was like one of the best moments of my freshman year, because it was just like, wow, you know, this guy gets it. And it's like you said, the one ROTC guy standing up, which same deal. But mine was delayed. I like the idea of a delayed debate. It's kind of funny. There's a little nuance to the legal system in Massachusetts I just figured out, as far as, you know, the Superior Court goes anyway. And they call it Rule 9. And it's like, it reminds me of VMI when I was at Virginia Military Institute, because they had this thing called the game, where you play the game. You know, you have your rules of the book rules, then you have your privileges. The rules and the privileges are not one and the same. You can get busted for taking some of your privileges, but that's what they call the game. You take your demerits if you get caught, but if you're taking your privilege, you're taking your privilege, you know? So they actually had a guy going around with a set of keys shaking it. You know, and this kind of Rule 9 thing reminds me of that, because it allows you to file a motion. Then if the other side comes back at you with something that just shoots your motion all to hell, you never have to even file that motion. You just put it in your back pocket and walk away, you know? So it's like the power to draw your weapon and then put it back in the holster, which I've never seen in any other court. It's a first. So it's going to get interesting here. I got this big case now here that's connected to scarletlawyer.com. Before I get too far off tangent, it's also judgegod.com details everything. And that was one that I got back from them after they shut it down. So that was a personal victory, and, you know, a victory for people everywhere that just want to speak out against injustice. You know, now I got three different things going on. I got this Indianapolis crap, four different things. I got the Massachusetts case, the Indianapolis case. I got Zion still going on, and this thing going on in Texas with Reggie that I'm just trying to help out with. I'm not fully even involved there yet. You know, I'm just looking at the evidence. That's like another book in itself. So in folklore, they actually call it the law of three. You know, you have three things. So I got Vegas, the Indianapolis situation, and Texas. That's the big three in my creative career coming up here. In my legal career, I get to fight in my home state court for once. So it's going to get really ugly and really interesting at the same time. But unfortunately, I'm probably not even going to get to write about any of it until after most of the litigation is over, just to be safe. But I'm going to write what I can. You better believe that. So I'm going to go off my soapbox because it's 9 o'clock. And we just got off with Bruce Buffer. We didn't really get off just talking to him. But we had some interesting things to say. I'm just curious if you wanted to respond in a delayed debate style to what he said about boxing, if you heard that part.
Well,
he thinks, like, I mean, and I respect his opinion. I mean, and I enjoyed listening to him. Like I said, I kind of wish that we didn't get distracted at one point because of my crazy mongrel of a dog outside, but it happens.
All the more reason for people to go to fnu.mypodcast.com and listen to the whole freaking thing.
Yeah, okay. Sounds good to me, but here we go. A few things that I'd like to comment on. First thing, when he's talking about Glenside, where he also grew up, that's where I grew up, Cedarbrook Elementary. Yep, I know exactly where that is. Cheltenham High School, that's where my dad went, and also the very famous Reggie Jackson, a graduate of Cheltenham. So, yeah, I mean, too bad I wasn't on the interview with the American man. I'm like, oh, did you ever go to Pizza Box? Or did you ever go to Rizzo's? Probably saw my grandmother. She used to work there. What about Jack Frost? You know, all the good Glenside hotspots that are, unfortunately, most of them are now gone. Thankfully, Pizza Box, knock on wood, is not. Still around, making the greatest pizza of all time.
If I either see him at the expo, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back and I'm going to transcribe this section of the interview. The radio show with you so that I can write these things down and when I see him.
Yeah, there you go.
That'll be my
Tell him Pizza Box is the shit. It still is.
Alright.
Awesome place. And the shame of it is when he was talking, you know, about boxing, you know, he doesn't watch much more of it. And he's doing his own thing now, which is great. But he brings up a very good point, which is a very sad point at the same time. You say boxing to anybody that's not a diehard, and the first thing they're going to say, you even say it to a diehard, the first thing they're going to say is, Pacquiao Mayweather, Pacquiao Mayweather. And it's a shame because every day that passes, it's more likely that it's not going to happen. And I was talking to one of my coworkers a few days ago.
I disagree with that. I'm going to bank
you. You think it's going to happen?
I know it's going to happen. It has to happen. You know, see, it's like, you know, the only reason it's not happening right now, which nobody is talking about, is there's still a lawsuit. Once that lawsuit's settled, that shit is on.
Okay, I hope you're right.
And not only that, but these guys got to have some tune-up fights, you know. Floyd hasn't really been tested, you know, and he's going to try to get tested, and in more ways than one, you know, he's got to do the blood testing, too, but, you know, he's going to get tested by some people, and Floyd is just sitting on his ass right now, not that he's not training, but he's just, like, sitting and waiting for shit to come through, so he's on his own time, and he knows it, he's got the money to sit back. And Manny's on the grind because he needs the money. You know, he wants to retire and be a politician for the rest of his life over there in the Philippines. So he's ready to go too, but he's going to get an extra couple of years at least in him. So they're 2-3 fights away from making this happen. But Floyd is the one that's taking it easy right now. And he's got to find somebody that's a statement fight. You know, not that Margarito isn't sort of a statement fight. He is, you know, but he's got to one-up Margarito. Big time. And that will call even more attention to the fact that these two need to fight, depending on their performance in both those fights, you know, their next two fights. And that's just going to put pressure on both of them to do that, settle the lawsuit, move on, and make it happen. And the animosity between them, the back and forth crap, all the drama, it's only going to sell tickets, you know.
Here's the thing. If the fight doesn't happen, they can both. It's hard for you and I to fathom, because if we both, you know, put all our money together, we both might be able to chip in and buy a keg of beer. probably Natty Ice.
Generous.
These guys are talking about like $20 million a piece, and it's like, it's just $20 million, you know, it's not that big of a deal. I mean, I think you and I, if they offered us $20 million, I think we'd meet up in New York right now. You come down from Boston, I'll come up from Philly, we'd go right in the garden right now.
Shot foot.
Yeah. I think I'd sprint up there. But that's the thing. These guys, the money, I don't think matters to them anymore, and I don't think it matters to Pacquiao. I don't think it matters to Mayweather. I think their legacies are more important to them than anything, and neither want to risk it. I mean, I'm going to harp back to the same two guys that I keep talking about all the time, and I'm going to say Sugar Ray Leonard and Tommy Hearns, because they were both at the top of the game. They were both undefeated. They were both considered, like, you know, the best, and they both happened to be the same weight class. They were willing to, you know, beat up in the middle of the ring and go for it. Guys like Ali and Frazier, you know, both had legitimate claims to the heavyweight championship of the world. The pound-for-pound title is like what the heavyweight championship was back in the 70s. It was the big thing. And Ali was undefeated. He had a rightful claim to the belt. Frazier was undefeated. He had a rightful claim to the belt. The best way they decided to do it was settle it in the ring. Made a lot of money. I don't think it means as much for Pacquiao Mayweather. I think their legacy, and they're each too worried about obtaining it.
By the way, like after I contacted Joe Frazier's manager lady, she finally got back to me and was asking questions about the show. So,
cool.
I guess there's some issues going on right now with Joe, but he may be on in the future. So not out of the question.
That would be so cool. That would be cool. I mean, like I said, I've met Smokin' Joe on a couple occasions. I've talked to his son. That still cracks me at the time he called me out to offer me a chance to come train with him at Frazier's gym. And I was just kind of convalescing from knee surgery. I thought it was a friend of mine. I was laughing at him on the phone.
Well, getting back to Manny and Floyd, you know what the ultimate justice would be in that situation is if when they do finally face off, it is such a tremendous back and forth fight, so close, so unbelievable, that it's a draw. And they have
God, that would be funny.
They have to fight two more times, and if those two fights were tied, the both. That's what I want to see. And that's why I think they should be ready to fight like that before they do. And that's why it's going to make more money when it does happen, because people are going to know from watching those fights. They're going to say, those two motherfuckers are ready to tear each other's faces off. They're going to be ready. They've been prepared.
But back to what Bruce was talking about. When he went to the fight, Pacquiao Mayweather, and he was basically saying, there's nobody else right now that's gaining any interest outside of Europe, you know, outside of Europe and outside of Mexico and South America. And sadly, that's right. I mean, back in the day, you know, you talked about, hey, man, we got, you know, this great up-and-coming, you know, middleweight, this kid Roy Jones coming up. Boy, he's going to be the next great thing. We got this other real popular fighter. We got this Arturo Gatti. He's not the best fighter in the world, but, man, we want to see him fight. We got to go see him. Now it's like, you know, who's the big extreme mainstream American fighter? Well, Kelly Pavlik, probably not. Paul the Punisher Williams, a lot of talent, and he's vulnerable enough that his fights are always good, but is there a lot of people beating down the door to see him? I'm not sure, outside of, you know, mainstream fans. A fight between him and Kelly Pavlik, I think, would be outstanding.
Bad news for the Sticker 6 tournament. I don't know if you heard, but Mikael Kessler's gone. Not that he's an American.
I heard that, yeah. I saw that on another one of the Facebook postings. So now what the hell is, you know, going to happen there?
That was making boxing exciting for a little while. People were asking me a lot about, you know, what do you think about the Super 6? Unfortunately,
the Super 6, I think, was a great thing. I really enjoyed it. And the guy that,
you know,
the guy that I enjoy watching more than anybody in that is Andre Ward. I mean, 20 years ago, Andre Ward would be a major breakout star. 30 years ago, he'd be a superstar.
Yeah, so I haven't even got to watch any of the fights. I don't think I've watched a single fight, more than maybe just a couple of rounds here and there. I think I did watch one of them after the fact, you know, but I never watched a single one live. I don't have Showtime anymore, so I don't.
The only one I missed was Abraham Durrell.
And then we had that fighter on the show a couple weeks ago that stepped up out of nowhere. I'm not blank on his name, but I'm supposed to write an article about him, so geez, I gotta find out who he was. I promised to write an article about him. See, I got such a to-do list. It's unbelievable, Tony. I gotta save the world, number one. Man, I hate it when I forget about things like that. Well, back in the day when I used to do nothing but MySpace postings with all the stuff, people that I, you know, generated a list of, you know, local contacts and people from all over the industry. You know, I was doing the conference calls every day, you know. I used to crank out some articles. Some real big good ones too, you know. Nowadays I maybe get to write one a day if I'm lucky. Sucks. Sucks having to do so much legal crap. Use Latin words and freaking statutes and all that bullshit. But I digress. Yeah, Kessler's out. Boxing is a land of the Jones. Margarito's got his license. Margarito made me only $20, a $20 check to get his license back, as this article says in the Times.
Unbelievable.
$20, that's all it takes.
You know, I just can't support that.
Guess what? It's on November 13th at Cowboy Stadium.
Another thing I can't support, Cowboy Stadium.
No. Have you seen that Troy Barkman commercial yet?
So which one's that?
Oh, they got this NFL commercial with, you know, the fan gear. It's selling on some site or whatever. I forget what it was actually selling. But they got a golden retriever like Vinny. I figured he'd love the commercial because it's like, they're like, Troy Barkman doesn't like that. And it pisses on the guy's helmet in his, like, game room. And the dog's got the Troy Aikman shirt on. He walked in, he couldn't.
No, that's abusing your dog, you know? Put him in Dallas gear. That's terrible.
Troy Barkman, they called him. That was even worse. Anyway. Yeah, so about $20. That's what it costs. Mailed in application arrives, accompanied by a $20 license fee check. That's all it takes. Redemption. Costs $20 in Texas. But for Reggie Johnson, it costs $220,000. How's that right? How is that right, America?
That
is sad. It sucks. It's like that baseball game we were talking about earlier. Anyway, we've done boxing to death. We talked to Bruce Buffer. We covered to death the main event coming up this weekend at UFC 118.
I think Hammer and Hank Lundy is making his comeback this weekend.
Yeah, we talked about that a little bit last week. I surprised you with that. Yeah, that was kind of controversial, but kind of his fault a little bit. Kind of he got caught. I shouldn't forget to mention, especially since we're still kind of talking about boxing. We got to see some nice smokers over here in. Stoughton, they call it, at the Pat Petronelli gym. I don't know if you caught that on the website, but I went to some smokers, a bunch of amateur kids fighting right out of the gym there, and it's like an old garage type of warehouse building. So they opened the garage door, and they had two cooking grills at the same time. One the traditional gas, the other one the smoker grill with the chimney and everything. And they had wood charcoal. And they had chicken and sausages and it works. And the deal was you come in, you give $20, get whatever you want, you know. And then they started selling some of the food, you know. So they made out pretty well. And they had like 6 fights, I think, and I got them all on tape. All of them. Real good footage. So it was like maybe like 30 seconds I missed in one fight. But real good slugfest. You know, the kids, not a drop of blood was shed that I saw. Kids that did get beat up, you know, they had the ability to get around it and deal with it with class and fight back when they could. There was no real mismatches, and the youngest kids had the fastest, quickest hands and the most unbelievable fight. Like, one kid is looking like the next Floyd Mayweather already. So it gave me a lot of hope for boxing, you know, and some local guys who really deserve it, one of them being my former coach, Tony Petronelli. He had 47 fights, and we got to get him on the show some week. I forget legend he is, you know. He's a great, great career. And he's got my lucky number amount of fights in his pro career, so that tells you something. 47 is that's my number. And I got to see the kid that broke my rib. I got some footage of him on the punch mitts, and I'll have to show you sometime. I put it up on YouTube. I haven't done that yet. But he actually got the sickest boxing tattoo I've ever seen in my life on his shoulder. And it's like, it looks like, I think it was like an American flag with some ripples, and then there was a speed bag posed on top of that. And it had the boxing gloves, you know, all decorative and everything, right down the freaking arm to the bicep. And I said, now that's dedicating yourself to the sport and telling people you wear it on your sleeve. So he's going to go places, and he's serious about it. He got a tattoo like that. So, I mean, it's like every time I hear something new about this kid, I say, geez, I'm going to brag about this for years. You're going to see this mofo on HBO someday, and I'm going to be like, that motherfucker broke my rib.
Well, I mean, I did. Well, I got my first tattoo back in '97. Paraboxing. I mean, paraboxing was my first one, and I debuted it down at a show in Richmond when I beat Willie Taylor at VMI. I was like, you know, even the coaches hadn't seen it yet, so I stepped, you know, took my shirt off again. You know, Coach Cooper was like, "When the hell did you get that?" And I'm like, "A few months ago." How's it look? It looks pretty damn good. I'm like, all right. Mrs. Cox, Doc's wife, didn't see it for about like another like 3 or so months. You know, we were, you know, just like checking our weight, you know, before we were going to tournament. And Doc hadn't seen me. And Doc's like, I'm Henneke. Is that a tattoo on your chest? I'm like, yeah, Doc. Jesus Christ. When did you get that? Then he's on the phone with his wife. Hon, Henneke. You got a tattoo. You should see it. Yeah, it's a fair amount. She's like, oh, and he's just, hey, wife. I mean, Doc didn't like tattoos either, but can't see the ones I have on my arm now. He probably shit a brick. But the one on my chest, he kind of liked the box. And he was like, oh, no, honey, you should see it. It's pretty nice. Yeah, he's got a pair of boxing gloves on his chest. No. No, this one's nice. Yeah, you like it. Oh, the wife doesn't like tattoos, and, you know, she's not going to look at it. She's mad at you now. She's saying you can have better things to do with your money.
Well, I always stand by my one dream tattoo that I have not considered getting because I can never afford it, I think. It's going to be something pretty serious. I mean, I want it to look good. I want the right artist. I want to get the right pictures to use. And it's very involved, and it fits my life to the T.
It's going
to
be the Fight News Unlimited logo?
No. Because, I mean, what if I die? Yeah, that's gone. I'm going to have somebody slice off my tattoo and laminate it when I die. Anyway, this is going to be the way it is. It's going to be a mongoose with boxing gloves on, squaring up against a king cobra in full spread.
Nice.
Boxing gloves on.
Okay, where are you going to put the gloves on the cobra?
And he's going to have fake hands. Like the Wii. Okay. Like the Wii bowling.
Okay. I mean, but it might be the perfect if the cobra's got gloves on. Because a snake with no legs is not a snake. It's a lizard.
Maybe he should take the gloves out. He's allowed to bite like Mike Tyson. Let's put Tyson on his chest. I don't care, you know, because I'm the good guy. That's what it is. And that's the symbolism of it. With mongoose is the furry, non-threatening looking creature. But if you throw him in a pit with a cobra, they say like 7 times out of 10 or something. That's not a statistic I've proven, by the way. The mongoose will win. And they used to have mongoose versus snake fights in Vietnam at the fairs and everything. My dad used to actually do one of the jump booths at the fair in Vietnam. He had pictures of it, and there was a sign that said mongoose snake fight tonight at midnight or whatever. So I've seen pictures. It's happened. And they do it more obviously in foreign countries than they would do it here. I don't know if I've ever heard of an event like that taking place in the United States. I bet it's happened somewhere. Somebody's had to get their thrills that way. But the point being, you know, it's also traces back to the story of Ricky Tikki Tavi. I don't know if you ever read that in elementary or...
Sure I have. I remember reading that in school.
That was a mongoose.
Yeah, it was.
They took out the snake. So that's what I'm like. That's my strategy as a boxer. I'm that guy that looks like I'm not that threatening. I'm not going to dismantle you, but when I go in there to fight, I'm gonna fight this harder fight, and I'm gonna get that cobra that's trying to be too aggressive. That's my strategy all the time, even in litigation. That's how I fight. I came up with a new one today. I don't know if anybody's ever coined this in the world of litigation, but you know how they say you fight fire with fire?
Yeah.
Well, this guy that just sued me dropped a shitload of paperwork off, like 400 freaking pages, right? So I got a new one for him. It's called Fighting Paper with Paper. So I dropped about 300 pages back on him today, courtesy of the U.S. Postal Service in priority mail. You should be getting that shit by Saturday, if not, already has it in his box. So that's my new one. I hope nobody's coined that, because I'm going to be like Bruce Buffer, and I'm going to go to the trademark office. I'm going to get that shit. And let that be a lesson to anybody out there that has itstime.com. Better beware. Bruce is going to come after you. He's going to shut you down. Do you ever watch that Tosh.0 show, Tony, on Comedy Central?
No, I don't watch Comedy Central that often.
Oh, man, you got to watch that show. I'm sure there's clips on the internet. And they always have this segment on the show called domain names that aren't taken. And they always come up with some good ones. I mean, there's a lot of them out there. I was surprised Scarlet Lawyer was not taken. ScarletLawyer.com, ScarletJudge.com. Got that one, too. Fight Monkey. They got Fight Monkey. I haven't done shit with it, but FightMonkey.info. The .info ones are the best because they're like 89 cents on GoDaddy. And nobody ever uses them. You know, but they're good. They're good to forward other sites to. BattleOfTheBadges.info. That's just a URL pointed to a Google blog with masking. So that was great. You know, and when we do the next one, we'll be able to market it at the same site. And it's already got search engine popularity. So, you know, it's just like unbelievable what you can do. And I talked to a guy way back when. I mean, I wish I had got more of the science and how he does it. But he was telling me, like, he just buys up domain names and then resells them to people. It makes a killing just buying domains. So if I had, like, you know, a couple grand to my disposal to do that kind of thing, I bet if, you know, I looked hard enough for the right ones, I could get some that people were willing to find, stumble across and be like, oh, man, I really want this. I'm going to have to pay for it, you know. And they'll buy it for, like, a couple grand for each one, you know, if you get the good ones. So, that's another thing. People out there is bracing against the bad economy. You got to think about the internet. It's just worldwide. It's universal, really. It's got a lot of power to it, you know, that I use to just speak my mind mostly, but I can't really think about the business side of it, too, one of these days. Start making some money. All right, that's my soapbox. The Canadian Medical Association wants to ban mixed martial arts, and Tony says yes.
Never said that.
Oh, you didn't? Are you accusing me of defamation?
Yeah. I never said barely anything.
All right. I'll let that stand for the record. It's your testimony. Until this month, MMA was illegal in Ontario, says this article. While Dana White said yesterday that Toronto was the place he most wanted to take the promotion next, the Canadian Medical Association wants the sport banned from Canada. The doctors that voted compared MMA to other activities that are just as dangerous to reach their decision. And that's according to ESPN AP. Yeah, the just as dangerous sports, golf and baseball. No. By the way, tonight, Tony, if you're willing to stay up late and you want to read some real classic, old school type of detailed writing about the latest guy to write a book about Rocky Marciano.
Nice.
from John Cameron over in the UK, who's writing a blockbuster book, and there's going to be a link to his website that he's trying to sell to a publisher, the book, through. And he's got just all kinds of accolades from people like Ferdy Pacheco, you know, just legends, all kinds of people that spoke about it. Even Peter Marciano's got a quote on there. So I guess people are liking the book. They like what they've read. I'm sorry I didn't have enough time to help the guy out when he asked me to, you know, but I'm going to help him out now. I'm going to post that up for him with a link. So all you Rocky Marciano fans out there, check it out. And I'll look at it and see what it is. See what it's all about. And John Cameron, I think all his contact information is going to be on the site there. It better be if he wants to get publishers to contact him. So if you are a publisher out there, you want to get a guy over in the UK who wants to be known as the most prolific biographer of Rocky, because I think it's going to be like a 400-page book when he's done with it. This is the guy, you know. He's going to get you the book that you want to. You're going to be able to sell for like $800 a copy for a hardcover. Man, it's going to be a good book. And I mean, it's unfortunate that a lot of the stuff that is out there about Rocky has been there for years, you know. And nobody has come along like him to write something new with a little bit more flavor to it. And this guy's really gone deep into his research. He's done a lot of work from what I've read. And I haven't even really got a chance to break the surface, but it's going to be up on the blog tonight. I promised him to have it up by last night, but I was a little bit busy with lots of crap. But anyway, the Canadian Medical Association. 7 provinces in Canada sanctioned mixed martial arts prize fighting. The Ontario government recently changed the stance and will allow mixed martial arts in 2011. Hockey and skiing, they say, are unlike MMA, as the intent of mixed martial arts is to incapacitate one's opponent. Those in favor of the banning the sport say it puts fighters at risk of severe head trauma and other injuries that could have lifelong effects. And as anybody knows who's listened to our show long enough, one point I always bring up about the safety of MMA compared to boxing is you have 2 different types of injuries that are more pronounced in each sport. In boxing, you have what's called pugilistic dementia from continued contact, multiple punches to the head over years of time. It gives you a condition, slow speech, you know, you shuffle a little bit. You know, if you got a real bad, you end up like Ali, you get Parkinson's. And that's boxing's bad news, you know. But in MMA, there's been a study that was done in the early years. I think I started citing it maybe like 2 or 3 years ago, but it's in one of my articles. And in MMA, the idea is everybody says, oh, it's safer because, you know, there's wrestling, on all punching and striking, but what you see is more concussions per capita per fight in MMA than you do in boxing, and those are the hardcore statistics that came out in the study that was done. So MMA can't get away with anymore saying that, hey, well, they're safe, you know, we're safe. Wrestling is safe. Grappling is safe. MMA, not that safe. You know, and they do make a lot of rules to try to make it safe. But anything can happen on any given day. And if you watched the last fight with, geez, poor guy, one of my favorite fighters to watch, still is, still going to be, John Howard. And he's a local guy from Boston who I met personally, saw him personally, shook his hand. We had him on the radio show. He got his eye so blown up in this last fight. It was like almost as bad as, remember that lump on the side of Rockman's head against Holyfield?
I remember that.
This was the guy's eye out that far. It's disgusting. We had to stop the fight, you know. And it's not the type of injury you really ever see in boxing. So you're not going to get that kind of a break and that kind of a swelling that quickly as it happens. And it was only a 3-round fight. And, you know, they had to stop what turned out to be an absolute war that anybody could have won at any given time. Give him credit. Even to the very end, even though it seemed like the Muay Thai of the one guy was really getting to him. But John just kept throwing haymakers and rights out of nowhere, just trying to get that big punch to land. And he landed a couple of them, but they just didn't have enough on to knock the other guy out, even though he rung his bell. bunch of times, and it was a great fight, but that kind of damage to your eye. You know, your eye is so much more important to just than just for fighting. Your eye is your whole freaking life, you know? And so that's serious business. And I remember actually there was a guy at Norwich when I was there, and I was coaching the boxing team at Norwich. This guy was a Golden Gloves boxer. And he used to come to practice every now and then at school meet and get in there with me. He's like one of the only guys who's not going to be afraid to box me. And he'd be like, you know, 50 pounds lighter than me, and I'd get in there and he'd tool me around. But he ended up hanging around with this Italian guy and going up to Burlington, Vermont, doing the pub crawl and purposely picking fights with people. And they get into street fights right up there, you know, in the middle of nowhere, and they just dismantled people, the two of them. It was like the best tag team partnership in street fighting history, I think, even though I never got to see it in action. But lo and behold, kid comes back one day, he's got a scratched cornea. His boxing career is over. You know? Sucked. And I don't think he ever got over it. You know, he probably still has to deal with it today unless he gets a really good surgery. But back then, I remember he was so devastated over it, and it was all just because he went and got into one too many street fights. Over nothing, you know, at least the MMA guy's getting paid for it, you know. Gotta give him credit there, but that's the other thing, you know, if you're gonna risk your safety a little bit more in that area, you know, you're gonna break more bones, maybe, than boxers. Well, not maybe, I guarantee it. How many times does a boxer break a bone, other than their hand? You know, or an orbital, maybe.
Yeah, that's a jaw.
I would say, I mean, can't guarantee because I haven't read any statistics on broken bones, but I would say that there's more broken bones in MMA too than there are boxing. And that would be all fine and good if MMA guys got paid just as much as boxers, but it just brings into light the whole discrepancy between fighter pay in both sports. When, you know, being the devil's advocate of what Bruce said, you know, if the UFC is the number one sport, and they're the be-all, end-all of MMA, and that's why MMA exists in this country, why aren't they paying the boxers' salaries to these MMA guys? Why aren't they paying that type of stupid money, as James Tony says, to their fighters, their best fighters? Some of their best fighters are getting really screwed. They got to get money from their own sponsors to just keep up training camp. You know, so that's one thing that I just like to put out there and say, shame on you, UFC. Because if you're worth $1 billion, why can't you pay your fighters millions, right? That's what they say they're worth. But I think that's the big grand illusion in the desert, is that they're not worth $1 billion, and they never have been. You know, maybe somebody would pay that for them, but the question is, are they worth it? Are they making that much money per year, per month even, to sustain that kind of a person to come forward and say, yeah, I'm just going to drop $1 billion right now to buy you out. All of you. Who's going to do that, you know? I don't know. They say they've had offers, but I haven't seen anything in writing. The one offer they got from people that are supposed to be the richest country in the world over there in Abu Dhabi, they estimated that at maybe 100 million, maybe 200 million. So who really in this whole wide universe is really going to pay $1 billion for the UFC? That's my question. And I actually have to address that specifically tonight to the Boston Herald, unfortunately. It was just one of those papers that I grew up on. And one of the guys there, Ron Borges, who wrote a lot about my father's situation with Whitey Bulger and some real deep, heavy shit that was good feature writing. And he writes these fluff pieces about the UFC because they're coming to town. And it makes me sick. Because none of these guys, and they're hardcore news people, they've been around forever. None of these guys look deep enough into it. I'm the guy that has to come off the bench independent and write about the real shady shit going on behind the scenes. That's worse than anything that boxing's ever seen, I think, in some respects. And it sucks, you know? These guys have the backing. And they get the print, you know? They could put these words out in print, the words of the truth, you know, the real facts behind the scenes, and they're just fluffing them up because they're coming to town. And it's just, it's the worst part of journalism, I think. It's the reason why I left the newspapers, because the reason they won't do it is because they're afraid they'll get sued because they have the money. Whereas me, I'm what they call judgment proof. I don't have any money to steal. And I speak the truth, so what are you going to do? You're going to sue me for speaking the truth? I got not only the truth, but I got the evidence to back it so that makes me a little dangerous. But, oh, man, it just makes me kind of, it really grinds my gears, as Peter Griffin would say. I'm a Family Guy. Because I actually, literally, every day I would get up, and my dad had the Boston Herald delivered to the house, the front porch. And really, the Boston Herald is one of those newspapers that had a big impact on my writing style. Because it's a tabloid format, like the National Enquirer, but bigger. And every story is maximized for space, you know? And that's always the way in the newspaper business. You got to learn to write short to get your stuff play and to get people to read it. So, and actually, it was proven by the free paper in town when I worked in New Hampshire. The free paper in town was like 4 pages, tabloid format, and it got more people interested in it and beat us to stories more times than not. And it was free. And ours, you had to pay for it and get delivered. And it was an afternoon paper, and they were a morning paper. You know, but the tabloid format, I had my high school newspaper written up in the tabloid format because of the Herald and the success of the Herald. And when even my sister was working for the Boston Globe, and she was selling the Boston Globe at intersections in one of the major arteries going into Boston, Dorchester. She had this job for like 4 years and went to Disney World on this job selling globes. She even made a deal with the Herald guy to get 10 cents for every Herald she was selling while she was selling the globes. So, I mean, the Herald has a real big history with my family, and it's a great paper, but, I mean, these guys are just, they're not opening their eyes to the real stories that they can have. So I wrote a nice little letter to them today, made a comment on the article. There's only 2 comments on it, the one that Ron just wrote, Ron Borges. And my comment was to the effect of, I thought he was an investigative reporter. Somebody should investigate how much brown he has on his nose. So I hopefully they like the free speech and they leave that up there. They don't get offended by it, but I'm sure he's taken sharper jabs before. And I just wanted to make my point on that because, you know, I don't toot my horn to make myself money. I'm penniless here, you know. I speak the truth so it's out there so people know, and maybe somebody that's in a position who can do something about it will. And it's like, I don't understand why none of these press outlets who have the power to do it will get out there and look into this and realize these guys just put a casino chain into $6 billion worth of debt. And then they bought it out of bankruptcy for $700 million. And nobody goes, that's a scam. Nobody in the press, really, nobody except me, has gone out and said definitively, that is a scam. And they've been doing it time and time again and getting away with it. And that's the guys that are in charge, the best of the best in MMA. It's unfortunate, you know. And, you know, Bruce makes a lot of good points about the Fertittas. They're very loyal to the people who are loyal to them. That's true. Does it make them good people? I don't know. I don't know. I think the jury's still out on that one. You know? But it's amazing to me that the guys that are getting paid to go out there every day and get the facts and get the story, and they're supposed to be the defenders of the truth in both litigation and the press, are sitting on their hands on the big stuff. It sucks. That's why I got so many suck sites. Now the Medical Association in Canada wants to ban mixed martial arts. So there's going to be a banmixedmartialarts.com. There isn't already one. But I'm not going to write it. Because I don't like the injury factor, but I don't see what you can do about it. You're stuck with what you got. And you take the risk that you sign up for as an MMA fighter. You get conditioned for it, you know, and like I've always said when I've had those statistics brought up before about the concussions, the statistics are still young, you know, the sport is still young, whereas boxing has been going on forever, and there's obviously some form of MMA and martial arts has been going on since the Romans, so you can't say it's that new, but it's, as an organized sport like boxing has been, it is new. far as keeping records. It's very new. There's only been, what, like three deaths in how many years? Three actual confirmed deaths, I think. Like, I don't know, how, whatever year you want to trace back to the origin of MMA, if you want to call UFC 1 the origin of MMA, I don't know. But however many years you want to trace it back, there's only been like three or four major confirmed deaths, either, you know, the night of or after the match. And one of them was a guy that shouldn't even have been in the ring, the cage, or on the mat, actually, was on the mat. He died right on the video. Or he went into a coma and never woke up on the video. That was kind of disturbing, but that guy had some issues, you know. He shouldn't have been, he was banged up in training, and he shouldn't even have been in there. And there was another kid in Texas that just happened not too long ago. You got one for me one time, which surprised the shit out of me. You were talking about it first. It shows you how much I've been slacking off from time to time. But it's happened a couple times recently, and that goes to show you it's the same sort of deal with boxing, you know, like Bruce said also. Boxing is huge in Europe. It's huge in some of these other locales where the population is greater. You got more incidents of matches going on, and as we always point out in our shows, we always have a lot of mismatches from those other countries. So the rate of incidents for deaths and you know major injuries from fights and everything increases because of that, because it's a higher incidence. And you don't have that many mixed martial arts cards going around, even nationwide, never mind worldwide, compared to boxing. I would venture to say it's exponentially larger boxing matches going on per day than MMA fights worldwide.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And with mixed martial arts, I obviously don't have the background, even if you do, or some of our listeners do, I don't watch it as much. But, I mean, in boxing, I mean, you're always going to have upsets. I mean, whether they're, you know, on small scale or large scale on the Tyson Douglas scale. But most of the times, if you get an up-and-coming prospect out here, they want to build him up and move him into, you know, rank contender. He might have, you know, a good amateur background. He might be an Olympic medalist. Might be a highly touted guy coming in. He might just have the right connections, you know. It could be the son of somebody. It could be the son of, like, say, you know, Tommy Hearns. It could be the son of, you know, Roberto Duran or just anybody like that. So they obviously want to, you know, capitalize on the Julio Cesar Chavez's son, Julio Jr. and his son Omar. Obviously, neither one of them combined even matched half of the father's credentials, but they're being matched up because of the name, and especially because of, you know, the senior's, you know, popularity in Native Mexico. So they're going to want to build these guys up and build the gate up, so they're going to put him in with fights that are going to make him look really good and say, boy, man, I want to see that guy again. I don't know if you have that, you know, same ability to do in mixed martial arts. I mean, it's hard for me to say. I mean, do you have any guys that are basically paid losers? I mean, not, and when I mean paid loser, I don't mean that in a derogatory sense, and I don't mean that in the professional wrestling sense either.
Called Opponents. But, there's like a documentary on it, I heard. Called Opponents, not losers.
Yeah, I mean, you have any basically, you know, opponents, guys that, you know, are, and I'm not going to say take the fall as meaning like the fight is illegitimate, but don't have the skill, or they might have not have the, you know, the training or, you know, the conditioning or the athleticism that some of these, or just the sheer talent that most of these, you know, other guys do.
This is what I'm talking about. Jimmy LeBlanc, guys like him, you get lopsided records, like 15 and 17. They get to a stage in their careers where they know they're not going to win any belts, so they try. They go in there and
I'm not talking about Jimmy LeBlanc. Jimmy LeBlanc, you know, even in his native, you know, West Virginia, wherever he's from, you know, he still is going to win, you know, 70% of his fights. Most of them are not going to be against top-ranked guys.
I'm talking to the guy from Wayman.
No, I'm sorry. I'm thinking of Jimmy Lang. I'm thinking of another Jimmy Lang. I'm talking about a guy. I went to a card a couple years ago, and this one, Hank Lundy, he's fighting Saturday. It was the first time I ever got to see him fight. And he was about 2 or 3-0 at the time. And he was fighting a guy that was like 1-4. You kind of knew who was going to win that fight. The other guy had a few moments of success, but overall he ended up getting knocked out.
You get a lot of fights. We say, okay, you get this hometown boy. I'm going to a fight. And I'm going to see, hey, oh, look, it's Chuck Masaccio. He's starting his career out. Highly touted kid. You know, he's got a lot of potential. He's fighting this guy. The guy's, you know, 4-12. Well, you know, it doesn't take a math, you know, magician to say, you know, who you think is going to win this fight. I don't know if you have, like, the same number of quote-unquote opponents to build your record up against. I mean, you get a guy like Brock Lesnar starts his pro career fighting Frank Mir. In the second fight, second or third fight, he's basically going for a title.
You only see those type of fights in the UFC, as far as I know. You know, I don't think I've ever really seen a huge mismatch in the UFC that didn't turn out to be either, you know, luck of the draw or just that guy was just that good. You know, it wasn't a matter of, you know, he was up against a guy that he should have never been in the cage with. I don't think that gets seen a lot. I don't think it happens a lot. And the UFC, which is not all of MMA, as some people would like you to believe, but in the UFC, at least, that doesn't happen a lot. But on the Ultimate Fighter show, that's the mission, which I've been pointing out before, is to get yourself a mismatch to get to the next round. That's really the mission for a lot of the coaches, to get that fight. They know their guy is going to demolish the other guy. And because those guys that come into that show now have to even fight to get on the show, that only makes those incidents of those types of fights go up. Because, like, they have to have 20 fights just to set up the show. And these guys go home on the first day, you know? And they sign waivers to them in there and do it, and that's why it's successful, because you got what it amounts to is, like, I don't know if you've ever seen this series, but there's a series out there called Felony Fights. You ever heard of that?
No, I haven't.
Felony Fights. I mean, it's disturbing. It's like Faces of Death for fighting. Fight. Yeah. Nobody really gets killed, per se, I don't think. But it's guys that are like ex-felons fighting in the streets on camera, purposely, you know? And there's like 3 DVDs in the series. It's like, it's better than Bum Fights. There's actually a video called Bum Fights, too. Don't ask me why I know this, but I had a cousin who introduced me to that genre, unfortunately. But, I mean, that's what it's like when they set the show up like this, and they don't even hide it. Like, Tito Ortiz is scheming with his fighter to get set up against a guy that might be injured. I mean, if shit like that happens, that's their goal, to get his fight where their guy has a walk, so he, next round, he's that much fresher to go into the fight, you know. So that's disturbing, you know, and that's one of the reasons why you should have people that are a little bit more responsible in charge of stuff like that. And one of the things that's coming out in all these glowing stories about the UFC that they're putting out because it's coming to town, is that the Ultimate Fighter show made them, put them on the map. And what they've done to it, you know, instead of make it better, I think, is they've made it more about the drama, and they've made it more dangerous for the fighters who participate in it. And Mikey Burnett, he sued, and his case is still going, I think, last time I checked, but nobody else has come forward and tried to get any revenge or sue for things that happened on the show, and I'm sure there's been a lot of injuries and bad stuff that's gone on, but I'm sure also that they have such good lawyers that they have these guys sign such crazy waivers that there's no possible way they could sue. They volunteered, you know? And that's the whole fighter's bum deal, is in a lot of ways, you have to volunteer to be a pro fighter. You know, because whatever winnings you make, whatever you pocket at the end of the day that you don't have to give to your promoter, your manager, your publicist, whatever, you're going to take in punishment in the ring. And I have a boxer actually who's one of the shareholders in Alliance who wrote an affidavit for me, and he put it into perspective for me because he wrote in his affidavit, you know, all this money that I put into Alliance, I have to go in the ring and take punches to the head to get back. You know? To rebuild my retirement fund, I might have to fight 5 more fights in my career and do that much more damage to my physique and my, you know, my brain power, whatever, that both sports do. And, you know, as much as we will cheerlead them to the day we die, we know, we all know when we get into these sports that they have dangers, you know. And that's why the risk payment is so high. It's like combat pay when you're in the military. You get extra pay for going into combat. hazard pay when you're working a hazard detail in the private sector. It's just part of the game, you know, that you accept as a fighter. But at the same time, as a promoter, it takes a big guy, and it takes like a conglomerate, like kind of like what's going on with Golden Boy and Bernard Hopkins and who's that other guy? Who am I thinking of, Tony? Bernard Hopkins and Golden Boy.
It's four guys. It's Oscar De La Hoya, Bernard Hopkins, Shane Mosley, and Marco Antonio Pereira.
It has to take something like that where the actual fighters get in the position. And that might not even be the best solution, but I think, you know, when you get the best fighters in the leadership position, it's going to change a lot of things. And if they keep being the dominant figure in Vegas like they have been with getting these fights and setting up good cards, you're going to see that cause a revolution in the sport of boxing, too, where it's going to be safer for a lot of these people. They're going to set up better matches that are good for both guys. And what I saw at the basic level with guys with headgear on this past Saturday, I mean, it shows you it's all about the matchmaking and the way you take care of your fighters on top of that, you know, because just because a guy is willing to go in there and take a beating for you and you're going to pay him to do it, doesn't mean you shouldn't take care of him after he takes that beating and he might never fight again, you know. And what situation is there, what setup in boxing is there other than, you know, the Retired Boxers Foundation, which does only as much as they can do, and they don't have that many resources. And they're not even sponsored by the promoters, you know, or major boxing organizations. It's just a fledgling thing out there that does a lot of good, but it's not enough. You know, they need more shit like that for both sports. And like we said before, I noticed that there's a union site out there, like a fighters union site, that I tried to register one time, and Roy Nelson didn't register. So, I'd like to see that. Maybe that's the solution, the fighters union in the MMA. Get together and they have to fight from the ground up for their rights, because I think a lot of those guys are getting screwed. And it's like equal opportunity under the law on the litigation side of things. To me, that's the way I look at it. Equal treatment under the law. Equal treatment under the bonus strategy. It should be in the UFC especially, not just MMA in general, but in the bonus strategy the UFC employs, they give an extra $5,000 for a knockout of the night or whatever, and maybe even $20,000. It varies so often, I don't even know how they calculate it sometimes, but they give these bonuses to certain fighters, whereas if there's 5 good fights in one night and only one guy gets that bonus but 6 guys deserve it, why don't they have the rights to sue the UFC under equal protection under the law and fair trade agreements, really? You know, there's so many business things that you would think they would be able to sue over that. Just not right, that whole bonus system. And then they turn around and they get in the face of an elite XC and say they're scumbags for telling Seth Petrozelli to stand up with Kimbo and he'll get a bonus. You know, it's the pot calling the kettle black in a lot of situations. But that's what really grinds my gears about the UFC. And I wouldn't care if they were just out there doing their thing, but, you know, they're out there doing their thing and saying they're the best of the best. And if you look a little deeper behind the scenes, you realize that they say that, but is it true? Does the evidence show that? You know, they take the best care of the fighters that they should. They're loyal to people that are loyal to them. What does that tell you? I don't want to throw Bruce under the bus. I bet if Dana White ever finds out he did this interview with me, he might get word to the wiser, as they say, chewing out. So I don't think he researched my background before he agreed to do an interview with me, and we kind of put the guilt trip on him anyway. But, you know, not to take anything away from his intellect, I'll tell you, he spoke the truth, spoke it like it was. I don't disagree with most of the stuff he said, but that point that I said, bold statement, that's the one, the definite one bone I had to pick with. But I didn't want to get into it because it was only a quick interview and, you know, it was supposed to be good for both of us, and tactful. And it proved to be a very, very interesting commentary on a couple of points there. on you know, a whole wide variety of subjects. And a couple of questions there I didn't even write down. They're just all on the fly. Especially the last one about, well, one of the last ones about, you know, what advice do you have to give? And then I didn't come up with that. It was just like one of those questions where I was like, all right, we still have like 4 minutes left. When are we going to ask him next? And he's by far the quickest reaction time of any interview I've ever done. The antithesis of the first Kung Lee interview.
Yeah, right.
So, Kung Lee, how did you get into boxing? How did you get into fighting? Yes. Fine. Very good. I don't think I taped that one either. That was back in the days before I taped my interviews. Just took notes. But anyway, do we have any other controversial issues to discuss inside or outside combat sports in the last 3 minutes here that you can think of? We're not going to the schedule this week. I think we might need to do something different with the show and start going. Schedule can be found on your own. I like it better when we just talk, you know? And we can come
up with fun.
Controversial shit every week. It kind of helps when I'm at the end of the day where just everything, I've had to do so much stuff today and go so many different places that everything just pops together naturally, you know? Like, I just edited the introduction like an hour before the show. And even though we were like a couple minute and a half late starting the show, everything's gone smoothly. We got 2 minutes left. So I'm done talking. That's the way it should be every week, you know?
Uh-oh.
Oh, cue, bitch.
Yeah, that's right.
Then we got our little reminder, you know. She's not very sexy, but she gets to the point.
No, not at all, actually. All right. Well, I think I'm done. I'm pretty beat.
All right. Well, your job then over this next week is to find at least 5 controversial boxing stories to talk about next week so we don't have to do any more schedule. Unless it's a big
Do they got any current stories or overall controversial boxing stories?
That's called current events. That's what they used to make us do at Air Force Academy. They used to make us read the paper and do current events.
I'll see what I can do for you.
All right. Google. That's sick.
Well, I'm out of here, guys. The tornado, I am done.
All right. Me too. And until next week, folks, adios and thanks for stopping by. And if you would like to listen to the Bruce Buffer interview, go to fnu.mypodcast.com. Of course, visit our sponsors, link to the top of the blog on the website, unlimitedfightnews.com and unlimitedfightnews.com/WordPress/WordPress. And check us out. We update just about every night. It's been a late night lately, but I'm trying to improve on that. So check it out tonight. Goodbye. Thanks. Go Combat Sports Show.